The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark Amtower. My guest today is a return guest, Monica Make, Vice President of Client Services for Market Connections. Yeah, finally, got it right. Cool. Monica, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Tell people a little bit about you and Market Connections, please.
Market Connections is a custom primary market research firm. We specialize in technology and the federal marketplace. We also do work in state and local education nonprofits, but our expertise is absolutely in federal. And we have a series of research. We're going to share some data from this morning going over what we've been seeing the past year, year and a half, in this market. I think it's a pretty volatile market right now. We're seeing a lot of changes, and technology is influencing what's going on in the market significantly.
And big time. So if you have not read Market Connections studies before and you've read my books, you've probably seen Market Connections research, because going back to 2005, it's in Government Marketing Best Practices, 2011, it's in Selling to the Government, and a little later on this year, it'll be in Government Marketing Best Practices 2020. I love Market Connections research because most of the time it verifies what I see on the front lines. We don't always agree, but we're always pretty close on just about everything, and their stuff is absolutely wonderful. Again, I've been using it for years. I was going through my library, digging out boxes that I haven't looked in for a while, and I found a copy of the first study that Lisa did. It has to go back to like 02 or 03 or something.
Mm-hmm. And it's the first public-facing study.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. not, yeah. You guys have done a lot of studies.
The company's been in business since 1996, so yeah, we're celebrating our 20th anniversary.
Congratulations.
And there's been a lot of custom research that that only our clients have seen, you know, proprietary to the client that commissioned it.
Right.
But we've definitely moved into doing a lot more public-facing thought leadership research. And earlier you asked about me, Mark. My background is in marketing. I'm not a researcher, but I help clients understand how to apply the data and the research to their marketing activities and their business development activities. So we're going to talk about a lot of suggestions this morning, best practices that are driven by what the market is telling us from the research data, and that we're seeing clients implement and see success from, or in some cases, they're making investments that they're not seeing success from and they want to shift to other areas.
Okay, so we're going to do a little bit of a backward look. By the way, all of the studies except for the new study, which will be released on the 30th, all of the studies are available at marketconnectionsinc.com. If you just go, is it a resources page?
If you can get to everything from the homepage.
From the homepage. But you can buy the full studies, and some of them I suggest that you seriously consider that. But you can download the executive overviews, and the executive overviews are rich with information as well. So I suggest you go there. So let's get into this. Biggest thing right now is the lay of the land. The market's changing perpetually. How does that impact us?
Well, Mark, we're seeing a proliferation of mobile devices and digital technology, and that's influencing how you can reach your customer because of the way they're consuming information. We're seeing a lot of market uncertainty because of budget pressure, and I think the election is really having an impact on what's going on in the market. We're seeing a lot of standstill because people are uncertain about what's going to happen in November.
I think you could argue that Obama won the first time because of his use of social media.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, his team definitely embraced digital media. But what we're seeing overall is that in all of our personal lives, we're embracing digital media. We have our mobile devices on us all the time. And Government is no exception to that rule. Although in the past, we've seen that government has not necessarily kept up with what goes on in commercial markets, what we do in our personal lives is pretty ubiquitous. And we all have at least one mobile device, if not two. And now government is doing the same thing. And in fact, I have some data here from the Federal Mobility Pulse poll that was just released in April that gets into a lot more detail about the number of mobile devices that government's using and when they're using those devices to access different types of content. It's not just from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m., as you might imagine.
No, I have to assume not. And the further up the food chain you go, I assume that usage is damn near 24/7. So
absolutely. And the federal workday is extending up to 3 hours a day because of mobile devices. And then additionally, we're continuing to see LPTA put pressure on government contractors and require them to be more strategic in how they go after pursuits and think differently about how they structure their business development activities and support them with marketing activity. There's been a lot of M&A going on in this market, and we're seeing that that is having an impact on how companies are positioning and the competitive landscape. So you can no longer say, oh, well, our competitor set is this. It's been this for X years. We're always up against these five companies. Those five companies are not the same anymore. Those companies have changed dramatically, and we're seeing
CSC, so, CSRA.
That's right. Exactly. You know, we're seeing a lot of shift.
Salient CRG.
A lot of shift and rapid change, which means that contractors have to be more nimble and adjust their business development and marketing activities much more quickly than they've had to in the past.
Yeah. One of the interesting aspects of the M&A activity is that I don't want to call them a bottom tier, but the smaller companies that merge or get together, that stays largely off the radar of most of the companies, but then they become power players in these little niches. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool to watch that, and it's more cool when you're involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and at the same time, we're seeing a changing media landscape. So from a marketing, advertising, even business development perspective, you have to think differently about where you are trying to reach your customer and prospective customer. You know, it's no longer about print trade publications, the newspaper, and even traditional radio. There's a whole lot going on in digital.
Hold it.
There's a whole lot going on in digital, and it's really important for companies to harness that in order to reach the customer and be successful with it. And then something that we've been seeing for the past 2 years is government telling us that they are hungry for educational content. They want to be educated about best practices. They want to keep up with trends in the market. And although we have a tendency as contractors to assume that government is behind on things, they're telling us they want to know more and they value knowing what's going on in commercial markets, being on top of technology, and they're looking to the vendor community to help keep them educated and on top of those best practices and trends.
I would argue that goes back as long as I've been in the market to a certain segment of the government market, because there's always been a desire on those who want to stay at or near the cutting edge to have that extra bit of information that helps them get their job done better, faster, easier, maybe not cheaper all the time, but better, faster, and easier. And those are the people who hopefully become the superstars, not always. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get back for a second to the mobile thing, because you and I were talking about this before we went on air. It is the mobile side is absolutely critical. And for those of you who read my posts on my blog or on LinkedIn or my articles in Wash Tech, you know I write about LinkedIn a lot. Their mobile app is absolutely atrocious, and 60% of their traffic is mobile.
Well, let me give you a few stats, Mark, on what's going on with mobile in the federal marketplace. We did a new study that we released in April, the Federal Mobility Pulse Poll. We found that 90% of government is using some kind of a mobile device. And 4 out of 5 told us that they feel their mobile devices are critical to their jobs, increase their productivity, and cause an increase in their work hours because they're constantly connected. A third of them are using both a smartphone and a tablet, and tablet use has increased from 25% in 2013 to 41% in 2016. So that's a big jump. It's a significant increase from 2013 to 2016. And smartphone only use has decreased. It was 75% in 2013, down to 60% in 2016. So that means people
because
are using
mobile,
more than
tablet,
one device.
Yeah.
And we also see in a lot of cases that people are using a personal and a government issued mobile device. And so you can assume that they are not just using that personal device for personal reasons, because in a lot of cases, their government issued device blocks their access to certain types of content. So if they want to get to that content, they're using their personal device outside of business hours. And we've even got some data on the times of day that they're accessing and the different types of content that they're accessing.
Okay. I would suggest that you go to the website and download the Federal Mobility Pulse poll study for that, because we're not going to go over the hour by hour time of day graph that they have. Suffice it to say, there will be surprises there for everybody. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You can find all of this information at marketconnectionsinc.com, and you can download us digitally at federalnewsradio.com if you want to put this on any mobile device for listening in the future. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Just a reminder, you can download this show at federalnewsradio.com. Just search on AmTower. All my shows for the past year or more will show up, which probably means Monica will be there more than once. So if you like listening to Monica, go back and download both her shows or all three. I'm not sure how many we've done recently. But let's talk a little bit about the 2015 Federal Marketing Media Study. Give me a few highlights, if you would.
Absolutely, Mark. You know, the Federal Media and Marketing Study is something that we have done for the past 7 years. We're working on year eight right now. We're finishing up the survey and about to get it into the field. And this looks at the media and information habits of federal decision makers. Where do they go to get information? What media do they consume? What are their preferences? And how much time do they spend with different types of media? We've got more than 3,000 people that respond to this survey annually. So it is a really comprehensive look at a cross-section of the market. So in 2015, we saw that the top preferred media channels for federal government news and information are news websites, television, print magazines, trade publications, and newspapers online. But none of those numbers are real high. The highest percentage there is 27% going to news websites and portals. So people are spending time with a variety of different media. And I think this is diluted also because government contractors have the ability to push out their own news and information on their own properties, websites, blogs, and so forth. So it's not just about traditional media. When I said earlier in the program that we're seeing a shift in the media landscape, that's what I'm talking about. Social media and the ability to publish online yourself has really changed what companies are able to do and how our customers are able to access information.
You know, that's an interesting point, because I do read your blog at fedpulse.com. I'm usually there, if not once a week, three or four times a month, so I may heavy up 1 week. But it's not for everybody, but for the people who read it, you know, they come back on a very regular basis. So the people that need marketing information are there. The people that need sales information are probably at the Federal Sales Insider blog on Immix Group. FedTech Magazine publishes the list of the top 50 federal IT blogs. I think it comes out in January or February, and it's the preceding year's top blogs from their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, not all of them are the most popular blogs in the world, but they're very targeted and very rich in information for very specific audiences.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Mark. So another thing we looked at in the Federal Media and Marketing Study is the time spent with media. So I look at this as a measure of quality. If people are spending 15 minutes or more per day, that's a higher level of engagement. And it gives you a greater opportunity to connect with people and draw them in. I mean, the average time spent on a web page is like 2.5 minutes. So if people are spending 15 minutes or more per day accessing different types of content, they are really engaged and looking to learn. So we saw in 2015 a significant increase in the time spent accessing news content online. It went up from 47% in 2014 to 62% in 2015. So big jump there, spending 15 minutes or more per day accessing news content online. Listening to online radio stayed flat and everything else decreased. So watching the news, listening to traditional radio, reading e-newsletters, accessing social media sites, and accessing news content in print, all the time spent decreased significantly in 2015. And I expect we're going to continue to see this trend. But what I am also seeing is that your traditional properties are expanding more into digital. So people may not be spending as much time listening to the radio, but when they go to the Fed News Radio or WTOP website, they can get a lot more content than they used to be able to get.
Oh, yeah.
And marketers have an opportunity to do more native content, placed content, that very message-focused and driven content on those properties than they used to have.
Okay. I love the targeted content. I've been talking about content for a long time. I have a newsletter, hard copy newsletter collection that goes back to the early 80s from companies like Colonnette Federal and Bodan Associates that would send out newsletters, hard copy newsletters, direct mail to feds, to contractors. And they were good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that kind of went away for a while because, print unfortunately died. However, the need for content and information has not died. And so now people are finally starting to learn that they can still put those messages out there. They just have to find the right places to put them and the right formats in which to deliver them. So another question we asked on the Federal Media and Marketing Study is, what type of content do you trust? We offered a long list of options, and what rose to the top at 41% is white papers and case studies. And this was followed by webinars at 27%. And then there was a drop off with editorial content, consumer opinions posted online, and corporate websites at the bottom of the list.
Not a surprise.
Yeah, the reality is your website is not likely to be the first, second, or third place your customers are going to look for content that they trust.
But think of this. If you have a particularly strong blog that focuses on cloud, cyber, health, IT, whatever the case may be, and you have legitimate subject matter experts writing it, and it's resident at your website, then you can start building an audience.
Yeah, and there are two things I would recommend here, Mark. I would say build out your the ability to reach your customer through the media platforms that are out there. Like I mentioned, the WTOP website, Washington Post Digital, GovExec is doing quite a bit with custom and native content. Plus, there's still opportunities to advertise, and you do need to meet your customers where they are. These are the places they're going to get information. Find them there, drive them to your content, and then deliver content in a format that they want to see and that they trust. So that's where the white papers, the case studies, and the webinars come in. And I think case studies are really important here, Mark. I don't see enough companies using case studies, and the government keeps telling us they want to see more case studies.
Well, the government also has to authorize use of them as the case being written about. But what I've done with selected clients is suggest that they just say, a civilian agency that focuses on these, and this is the problem.
That's absolutely right. Blind case studies are absolutely acceptable. And the other thing government tells us they want to see are case studies from the commercial world. They care about best practices. They want to emulate those best practices. IT modernization is driving a lot of that. They need to modernize their networks, not just because it's been mandated, but because their old networks are no longer working and serving their needs. So they're looking for those use cases. And a lot of the companies that serve the federal marketplace also have commercial divisions. And so bring in those case studies from what you're doing in the commercial market. Your government customer will pay attention and value that, particularly in the right formats if you meet them in the right places.
Yep. Yep. So next.
Well, Mark, I know you always care about what's happening in the events world. And we saw in 2015 a significant increase in events. 55%, more than half of government, attended at least 1 to 3 events. So in some cases, even more than 3 events. We're seeing the pendulum shift back here. You know, we had the GSA scandal, which caused everyone to clamp down and restrict event attendance. The pendulum is swinging back now. People are able to go to more events. But in the meantime, since government customers were not able to attend events, we saw webinar attendance rise significantly. So from 2011 to 2015, nearly half attended no events in 2011. Fast forward 5 years later, more than two-thirds attended at least 1 to 3 webinars in 2015. So big shift here. And I think the key, they want them. They want that information. It's convenient. It's easy to access. And also, digital devices are driving some of that too, because people can access those webinars anytime, not necessarily during the workday.
Right.
But the key is to make those webinars educational. They are not intended to be a sales pitch. Your government customer isn't going there because they want a sales pitch. They want to understand the technology. They want to understand the trends. They want to understand how they can implement better solutions in their organization. That's what they're looking for the vendor community to advise them on in these webinars.
Yeah. Caveat I always throw out is it's much easier to make a bad webinar than a good one. And
absolutely,
most people do.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Mark, this is a place where thought leadership comes in significantly. I have some clients that have done thought leadership campaigns with Market Connections where we are using...
Let's pick up the thought leadership on the other side of this break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Market Connections has a new study being released on June 30. The event will be at the Gannett / Tegna building in McLean. You'll be done by 11:30 in the morning. I suggest you go to marketconnections.com / GovCon 2016 and register. It'll be well worth your time if you're sales, marketing, business development, or C-level. This is killer stuff. Be there. Back right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I misspoke. The web address for the event is marketconnectionsinc.com / GovCon 2016. Look for me. I'll be the, I always sit in the back and I always wear black and I don't wear ties. going to a formal dinner this week, not wearing a tie. I'll wear a coat. There's a minor concession.
Well, as long as it's all black,
there
it works
go.
For you,
of
right,
course.
Mark?
Yeah, definitely. But let's touch a little bit on the thought leadership, because I use slides that are now 4 years old, but I believe that a lot of the information is still valid, although the statistics have probably changed.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mark, in 2012, when we did our first government contractor study, one of the things we saw that companies with higher win rates were doing is thought leadership activities, developing thought leadership content. And the concept of thought leadership was a newer one in 2012. I mean, I could argue that the concept's been around for a long time, but in this market, it was just starting to gain traction in 2012. So then in 2015, we released the Federal Content Marketing Review, and we asked the government a lot of questions about what they use to inform and educate them during the decision-making process. So you've heard me say on the program today that government cares about being educated and they care about best practices and hot topics and trends. In fact, 85% said, the benefit of digital content for me is learning hot topics and trends. 84% say the benefit is education, 83% say the benefit is training, and 75% say the benefit is best practices. So we're seeing a pattern there across the board. And what I think is important for government contractors to remember is how to deliver that education and that training and those best practices. So I started to mention webinars before we ended the last segment. I have clients that have asked us to do thought leadership research studies where the research is the platform, the basis for how they go to market to talk about a product or a service. And we do a webinar where we spend 10 minutes doing like a data dump of the research, and then their subject matter expert or their salesperson gets on and talks for 45 minutes about their product. That is not a recipe for a successful webinar. Then I have other clients where we have very carefully worked out the conversation that we're going to have. And we talk about case studies, use cases, how we've solved, not we, but how our client has solved the customer's problem. And we weave the research data into that conversation. It becomes very conversational. It's back and forth between two, maybe three people. The engagement level on those webinars is fantastic.
You mean better than somebody reading slides?
Absolutely, Mark. And you know, part of what we do there is think and craft very carefully the message. We practice, and I don't mean rehearse like you're reciting, but we practice how that flow is going to work. And we see incredible engagement throughout the whole course of the webinar. And then people pick up the phone and call our client afterwards and say, I want to know more about this. Mm-hmm. Because the research validates our client's position and the conversation keeps them engaged in the solution.
Right. And the cool thing about webinars, if they're done well, is they are evergreen until the technological solution changes or whatever you're discussing. So once you have it there, you can drive traffic to it perpetually. And to go back to that one slide that I love from a couple, actually it's just from last year, about content influencing each part of the procurement process, your salespeople, your business development people, everybody can drive people to that particular type of information they need at whatever step they are along that procurement process. I love when that happens.
That's absolutely right, Mark. What we see is that decision makers consume different types of content at different times in the procurement process, or if they have a different role in the procurement process. So as you know, there's never just one decision maker in the government. There are many decision makers and influencers involved in setting requirements, identifying the potential contractors, and making the final purchase decision. And there are different types of information that will influence at different points in the process. So it's important to keep in mind connecting with your customer all along that very long government sales cycle that we know is a challenge, and hitting them with educational content, content that they trust, and in a format that's easy for them to consume, especially if they are a decision maker that's running around to meetings all day using their two or three mobile devices.
Mobile device.
Mobile is key.
You know, they don't carry around laptops.
Absolutely. So, Mark, you know, we were talking about the education training and staying current on best practices.
Well, let's touch on training, because we've discussed this online, offline, on air, off air, mm-hmm. you know, so many times. The types of events that seem to resonate are focused on a particular issue, a particular technology. And you mentioned, as an example, between takes here, the Amazon event just held recently.
Yes, Amazon Web Services had their public sector summit earlier this week, Monday.
Geek Central.
Pardon?
Geek Central.
It was very technical. I attended some of the sessions. Interesting, but you know, I'm not a developer, so it was not necessarily in my wheelhouse. But what I noticed is that there was incredible engagement. The rooms were full. There were a lot of people who are responsible for figuring out how to modernize their organization's systems, network, how to make things more functional, how to get systems to talk to each other and work together. And, you know, they're looking to go to the cloud to ease that. And they're trying to figure out how to make it more cost effective. I'm not going to say cheaper, because I don't think that's really the name of the game. How to be more cost effective, get what you need, have it work together, and you know, meet the needs of ultimately the users,
right,
in a more cost effective way for the
agency.
You
want cheap, go to FSSI.
Amazon had about 4,000 people attending that event. I think more than 100 sponsors and a couple hundred speakers.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Huge event. That is an event.
Yes. Huge event. Absolutely. Absolutely. So with the education and training, one of the things we saw in the Federal Content Marketing Review, Mark, is that there are significant gaps between what government thinks and what contractors think. So contractors were significantly less likely to feel that there's benefit in providing education, training, and best practices information to government. Meanwhile, government is saying that's what they hunger for. So I think there's a huge opportunity here for contractors to become trusted advisors by providing their government customers with content that they trust and that will educate them and train them and help them maintain best practices. And it's a missed opportunity if you don't plug in those holes for your government customers. They are looking to the contracting community to help them stay on top and modernize their systems.
They are. Everything I'm reading is saying that. I even saw that that some CIOs are cutting their internal training budgets for certifications because they're making sure that all those certs are on the contract. So They're hiring that talent. They aren't necessarily making it resident, because if it's resident, it's mobile. It can leave. Yeah. Your investment's gone. Mm-hmm. If you make it part of the contract, it's there for the life of the contract.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, government also told us that the types of valuable digital content to them that they feel will meet these training and education needs. And research reports, webinars, case studies, and white papers are at the top of that list. And taking that a step further, we talked earlier about the proliferation of mobile devices, and that people are using more than one, and they're accessing content all times a day, not just during the workday. Weeknights, weekends, when they're on vacation, and when they're on business travel. So if you think about the fact that they've got a phone or a tablet, you think about downloading a white paper. White papers do not naturally work great on mobile devices, especially if you're on a phone. So the contracting community really needs to think about developing their content in a variety of formats that are optimized for mobile. So, you know, a white paper is not really an ebook. An ebook is a very specific e-publication that is designed for use on a mobile device.
Yeah, you showed me a PDF on your larger tablet, and it was difficult to maneuver.
That's right. So we've got to start developing the right formats that make it easy for our government customers to access the information. And I'll tell you a little story. One of my clients said to me, oh my gosh, I download all this stuff, but I don't necessarily have time to read it right that minute. And, you know, maybe I want to email it to myself or to someone else so that I can look at it later when I have more time. And she said, I don't understand why I can tweet it and I can post it on LinkedIn, but sometimes there isn't a link for me to just email it to someone else or to myself. So we also have to make content easy to share.
Yeah. Yes. We're going to take a break. Once again, the event that's coming up June 30, I strongly suggest you attend marketconnectionsinc.com/GovCon2016. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Monica and I will be back to wrap up right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Once again, I am Mark AmTower. Monica Make is with me, not Lisa DeZutti, her partner in crime at Market Connections. So on the 30th, what kind of information, just give me like the 60-second tease here.
Sure thing, Mark. This is the best practices study. And we did something similar in 2012, but we've changed it up in 2016 because let me tell you, the market has changed significantly. And the types of marketing we do have changed significantly. We are also looking at the best business development practices that are helping companies to be successful. So we're going to take a look at changes in recompete and new pursuit win rates, the strategic decisions that companies are making in order to remain competitive in a very competitive, tight market, and in which we've seen a lot of M&A activity, which has really changed the competitive landscape. We're going to take a look at how the challenges marketers and business developers face align and are different. And we're seeing actually more alignment than we expected. So we're seeing sales and marketing come together a little bit more. But, you know, it's really important for marketing to understand what their business development counterparts' challenges are so that we can provide the right marketing support to really help that.
Yeah.
We're going to take a look at the processes and the best practices for business development that are helping to streamline and standardize and leading to more success, especially as the procurement cycle is longer and longer. And so you're having to spend more time and work harder to keep opportunities moving through the pipeline. We're seeing some challenges around data. I don't think this is a surprise. There's more data than ever before. How do you manage it all and leverage it and measure ROI around it? We're going to share some best practices and what companies are telling us they see as being more effective. And then overall, the most effective marketing activities for companies with higher win rates and some of the bigger companies out there.
My favorite part. Actually, they're all my favorite parts. I could write a book about each of them. Just give me your reports and I'll write the book.
As long as I can get a co-writing credit there, Mark.
Oh, hell yes. Hell yeah. So let's backtrack a little bit to perhaps my favorite arena, the SME and thought leadership approach to winning business.
Mm-hmm. You know, Mark, I think thought leadership is a key activity that's important for both the marketing and the business development side of the house. The clients that we work with that are leveraging market research to validate their position and demonstrate their expertise and are bringing their business developers and their subject matter experts into the process are having more success because they're able to go to their customer and not say, hey, take my word for it. We know what we're talking about. We developed this technology. They're able to say, we've spoken with you and your peers. We understand your challenges. We have asked you what you need, and we've developed solutions to meet those needs. And the subject matter expert or the business developer who's on the ground day in, day out with the customer is able to share those case studies and stories that bring together what the data says, what the solution is, and what the market needs. So when we talked earlier about education, training, helping the government customer stay on top of best practices and trends, we also mentioned different types of content and how to get to people with that information. So they tell us research reports are the most valuable content for them, webinars, case studies, and white papers as well.
Oh, the research reports is kind of neat, you know, because I've been reading, again, your research since day one, not the private stuff, the public stuff. Mm-hmm. But I know of companies that, especially in the summer, they get, you know, some college students as interns and they put them on the phone. They say, don't try to sell anything. Just try to find out what's going on out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't even know what to ask.
Yeah.
So this is not research.
So true, Mark. The research that we're talking about here is a study, a report that's got data, charts, facts, And we look at things like, what are the top challenges? What are the barriers to adoption of a technology? And sometimes those barriers are procurement processes. Sometimes they're budgetary. Sometimes it's adoption of technology. Sometimes it has to do with getting your decision makers at your agency bought in to what you're trying to do. And when you as a contractor understand what those barriers are, then you can address them upfront with your government customer and help them get where they need to go when it comes to adopting a solution or putting technology in place. So one of the things we're going to see next week in the new research is the top activities that government contractors have rated as effective. And we see thought leadership rising to the top of that list. That's one thing I'll share today. I don't want to give it all away, but 3/4 are telling us that thought leadership materials are their most effective marketing activity. And it's very interesting because it's not just the marketing people that feel this way. Top executives agree. So there's alignment between marketing and executives in this area. And I think we need to get business development and subject matter experts on board as well. Some companies are doing that. My clients tell me that's a little bit more of a challenge for them. But I can tell you from my own experience, when we started the conversation with the business developers and the subject matter experts, they're skeptical at first. Like, we're going to do this research study. What am I going to do with this? And I've had to say to them, look, here's what the data shows. Your customer wants this information. I'm going to help you learn how to apply it. And they've come back to me and said, oh my God, you were right. I was skeptical, but I took a research report. I took an infographic. I took one slide from a report and I had a conversation with my customer and the conversation changed completely. My customer was much more engaged. They had a better understanding of what I was trying to share with them and why. We had a better, deeper conversation, and we moved it along to the next stage in the process.
You know, I used to think of infographics as content light, but I started talking to CIOs about them, and every single one of them said, these help me grasp something complex quickly and aim me in a direction that I might not have thought of otherwise.
That's right, Mark. We call it snackable content. And it's also very friendly when you're thinking about how you're going to push content out on mobile, on digital platforms, and on, enabling people to use it on their different devices. So, you know, it's not just about what the content is, but the format of the content is really important when we have this media saturation and people are spending all day, every day on all different types of platforms. So you've got to meet them where they are. And wherever that may be, you need a piece of content that will work there.
Yep. And the graphical aspects are, I mean, you know, we're all visual learners, period.
Absolutely. So. And that's the difference. I can tell you from, you know, I look at a spreadsheet and I go, I don't know what this means. I graph it out and all of a sudden I see the meaning. I turn it into an infographic and suddenly it has completely different meaning because you're putting a picture with a number. And so, you know, also people learn in different ways. Some people are visual, some people are auditory, and you need to hit lots of different people in lots of different ways in order to get that message across.
21 million people in this country are illiterate.
Really?
Adults.
Wow.
That's scary.
I hope none of them work for the government.
Well, there are tests to get in, but, you know, I don't know.
Well, with respect to thought leadership, Mark, another thing we see here is when in the Federal Content Marketing Review, we asked, why share online content? So as you know, if you're sharing something, you're putting your reputation on the line. Mm-hmm. So your government customers, they're smart enough to not share something that they think is going to make them look stupid. The number one thing that makes content shareable in their minds is that it includes valuable data points. So they're willing to share it with their colleagues and counterparts if they feel it has valuable data in it. They also care about it having thought-provoking ideas coming from an independent third party. And that's where the research reports become really important because it's not you saying, hey, take my word for it. You've got an independent third party validating your position.
Me and my 3 interns.
Right. And they also said only 50% of them cared about the content confirming their viewpoint and opinions. So that tells me that it's okay to refute what might be common knowledge and to be a little bit provocative. So the government is not looking for you to confirm their viewpoint. They're looking for you to educate and inform them about what they need to know. It's okay to challenge the status quo.
You got it. I mean, you know, it's not a static market. final thoughts.
Well, Mark, I'm very excited about what we're going to share next week because it's one of the few times a year that we are able to come together, sales, marketing, and business development and executives, and take a look at what we're doing well, what's effective, what isn't, how we can do better. And the reality is, it's not up to just one area of the organization. They all have to be working in concert in order to be effective, especially in a market as demanding and dynamic as the one we're in. So I can't wait for the panel to share their feedback because I think we're going to hear some really interesting things from executives, people on the BD side, and people on the marketing side.
Yeah, your panels are always great. Thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate it. I know where you drive from. So
I only came from Reston today, Mark.
Today. Okay. Not from Philly. All right. So, but thank you again. You can find the information again at marketconnectionsinc.com for the upcoming. I suggest you download some of the executive summaries for the studies we've been talking about for the event / GovCon 2016. And again, Monica, thank you. This is not my day job. I advise companies on all aspects of marketing to the government. I do use a lot of market connections research. I also use 31 years of experience that that most people don't bring to the table. And I am an outsider. I am not there to validate anything that's going on. I'm there to make sure that my clients get the biggest return on investments for their marketing dollars. You can find me at federaldirect.net and all over LinkedIn. Thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.